Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome to this Peak Prosperity Podcast. I am your host, Chris Martinson, and today I get to invite on the show somebody who I'm very excited to invite on the show, Robert Kiyosaki, American investor, businessman, self-help author, motivational speaker. I just had the opportunity to spend 3 days with Robert, his lovely wife Kim, his team, and some select people who were invited to a three-day seminar where the topic happened to have been my book. So I was invited as the author to come and provide some additional color on top of the book. Robert, thank you so much for joining me today.
Chris, thank you. I mean, it's you and Adam were just fantastic additions to our 3 day in Phoenix, Arizona. Like I said, we have a lot of seminars throughout the world, but we have a very closed seminar twice a year in Phoenix. And you were the not only the goat, you were it, your book, everything, and it's so nice to have been with you.
Well, thank you. Adam has had a great time as well. We've been talking about it ever since, and you know, there were a number of things that really struck me. One, you're a student of history, and even more so than I am. I love history. I love the way it's going to inform us about what's coming. And one of the themes that came out was there's really nothing new under the sun, right? You know, whatever is going to happen tomorrow already happened yesterday, I believe is how you put it. What do you mean by that for people listening?
For those who came to the seminar, I showed pictures of a thing called the Weimar Republic.
Yeah,
you can go to any website and you can pull them out. And it's what happens when money is no longer money. In other words, we're all so busy, go to school, get a job to work for money, but they never tell you what money is. And then one day, money is no longer money. And what you're talking about has happened through history. It's happened for thousands of years. Is that once somebody figures out what money is, they aberrate it, they change it. You know, it started in Roman times when they got your coins and they debased it. In other words, what they did, they put base metals like lead and nickel and tin instead of silver and gold. And any time that has happened, poverty goes across the land. You know, Mises said that also. He says that when you extend credit, poverty increases. And so my whole shtick for all these years with Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and other book, Rich Dad's Prophecy, is that Federal Reserve money, printed money, or any fiat currency today, be it the yen or the euro, is impoverishing people. And that's why, you and I were talking about one day we kind of wake up as adults and go, what am I going to do about this? So in 1984, when I realized poverty was going to increase across the world, I didn't know what to do, but I just had to do something. And that's where this whole thing, that's what I wanted to talk to my friends about, was the vision I saw for the future. And you and Adam share the same vision. What happens if money is no longer money? What happens to society then?
Well, it's a very interesting point because money is tangible. It's real for all of our lives. And you know, that's how it really feels to us. But that's just an illusion. Once you study how money is actually created and you discover it's made out of thin air, then you realize, well, wait a minute, maybe that's good, maybe it's bad, but we better be paying attention to how much is being created out of thin air. And you and I share a number of the same charts we might put up. One is just this absolute exponential increase in money and debt, which are claims on real things. And then you and I look over into the real world and we see that production isn't increasing exponentially at the same rate. There's a huge gap between the claims and the real stuff. My point of view is it's better to have your hands on the real stuff because there will be a moment when people suddenly wake up. It'll be a sociological event and they'll go, hey, about all that money you've been printing, Federal Reserve, I don't feel so good.
Right. And again, we're saying the same thing, is that the more money you print, the poorer we get. It's so obvious. It's happened throughout history. And yet people get up every morning and go to work and work for money. Or if they get fired, they just get another job to work for more money. And after a while, you got to wake up and say, why am I doing this? If they're printing money, why am I working for money? And that's kind of what happened for me back in, you know, it's been going on, but 1983, I just kind of woke up. I said, I can't know what I know and allow this to go on. So if you read my book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, people don't really get the message on the first chapter. The title of the first chapter is Rich Don't Work for Money. That's why they're rich. And yet you go to school to get a job to work for money. And the more you're working for money, the poorer you're getting because of inflation and taxes. And then, well, what do you mean? I'm making more money, but you're getting poorer. That's what we're saying. Isn't that true?
Yeah. Well, if rich don't work for money, what do they work for?
Well, they work for the, we print our own money. It's cool. We have assets, a different kind of assets in the world. That was rich dad, poor dad, you know.
Yeah.
My poor dad worked for a paycheck. My rich dad worked to create assets. So he was an entrepreneur. He built hotels. He built restaurants. And he didn't sell them. He just ran them as an entrepreneur. So he built assets. So if you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, the definition of an asset is something that puts money in your pocket whether you work or not. And a liability takes money from your pocket. So my rich dad, you know, he used to teach me that playing Monopoly. You know, four greenhouses, one red hotel. One greenhouse, you get $10. That's an asset. So there's financial assets, the real property assets like real estate. There's IP aspects, intellectual property assets. So every time I write a book, it's an asset, and more money comes in. So the point here is I'm always converting cash into an asset. That's the difference. That was what Rich Dad, Poor Dad was about.
Well, one of my first moves, I came to this story much later than you did by the time I finally arrived at my own conclusions about where we were headed. And one of the things I decided to do was just take my physical paper dollars off the table and slide them over into gold and silver for a period of time as I waited for some sort of a transition to happen. And that was back in 2002. And it's been, I hate to say it, but it's been fairly lucrative and profitable for me, at least, you know, on paper when I transfer these things back into paper assets, if I do. But I was just trying to put my money into a place where it was safer, safe from the forces that I could see happening even back in 2002 for me, where were excessive money printing and really poor fiscal control at the government level. And both of those, fiscal and monetary policy, were just trying to print our way to prosperity, something I didn't believe in.
Right, they're taxing and printing. And that's why the middle class is shrinking. That's why poverty is increasing in America. As Mises basically said, you expand credit, you impoverish the people. This has happened throughout history. And again, every time I see Mr. Greenspan or Bernanke or now Mrs. Yellen standing up there talking about we're just printing money, I just wonder how in the world did we get so stupid as an American people? How did we get so stupid we can listen to these guys talking about money printing and thinking it's making us richer? Because they must know better. Don't you think they know better, Chris?
They have to know better. They have to. How could they not?
Well, if they know better and they continue to do it, then they're criminal. Do you know what I mean? They're impoverishing a great country. You know, I always say the American dream is turned into the entitlement mentality. And so I'm not blaming the poor for having the entitlement mentality. I would say the entitlement mentality starts at the top of the country, not the bottom. And so that's really the problem. As American dream goes, that they can make a better life for themselves and say, well, I'm entitled to a better life. There's a very big difference.
Well, it's true. You know, the amount of welfare that's handed out on both the bottom and the top of the scale are just staggering amounts, just huge. They're just wealth transfers, of course, coming out of the middle class, flowing both directions. But you mentioned, you know, the impoverishment of intelligence in the country. Let's talk about education for a minute, because I'm a big believer of this idea that our educational system was designed to create people to work in factories, and I think it did that brilliantly, but people don't work in factories anymore. And so we do have people coming out of school without the appropriate context even to know what's happening when a Yellen or Bernanke or Greenspan says, I'm printing money. What are your views on that, and how do we move in a better direction?
Well, that's why Rich Dad Poor Dad they're opposite. My poor dad always said, go to school and get a job, and my rich dad said, you'll never learn to be an entrepreneur in school. So why go to school? So learn to be an entrepreneur and create jobs. And the problem with most people leaving school is they don't have the skill set to be entrepreneurs. The skill set for entrepreneurs is different than the skill set for employees. For example, you know, I have a college degree, Bachelor of Science in Naval Architecture, and I've never used it. I when somebody says, how much money do you make from a college degree? I said, nothing, because I don't use it. But what I did when I came back from Vietnam in 1973, I was a Marine pilot, and my poor dad said, go to school and get a job. My rich dad said, you better learn how to sell. And that's two different points of view. So I went to school to learn how to sell, whereas my poor dad wanted me to go to school and learn, I don't know what, to climb the corporate ladder. Then after I learned how to sell, my rich dad said, you still have to learn how to use debt, because money is debt. And most financial experts say get out of debt, which is good if you don't have any financial education. But if you want to be rich, you have to know how to handle debt. It's called financing. How do you finance something and get richer with it? And then the third thing you had to learn was taxes. Because, as you know, every time they print a dollar, two things happen. Inflation goes up and taxes go up. And that's killing the people working for money, because as long as you have a paycheck or you're on the cash society, your money is decreasing and your taxes are going up. That's the problem.
Now, let's back up on debt for a second. I'm regularly counseling people to get out of debt if they can, high-yielding debt, non-productive debt, consumptive debt. What kind of debt are you talking about?
Well, there's good debt and bad debt, and consumption debt is always bad. You know, like, let's say I go to dinner and I break out my American Express card and dinner's $400. Well, that dinner lasted an hour, but the bill lasts forever. But when I use debt to finance a piece of property or, you know, like a business or, you know, to bring a book out, then that debt provides income each time. So it's good debt and bad debt. And simply, you know, bad debt goes to buy liabilities like a house, a car, clothing, food. And good debt goes to buy assets, such as, like, you know, as we were discussing, I'm buying a hotel. You know, that, why am I buying the hotel? It's because it's got water rights and it's got food. You know, that's what I'm buying it for, so I can produce from it. So the idea is not consumption, but production. So good debt goes to production, bad debt goes to consumption, and most people should get out of bad debt as consumption.
Now, it's interesting, in your book Prophecy, you had put some timelines up that, when you and I were comparing notes, were eerily similar to some timelines I've had. And in that timeline, you see some sort of a pretty major market correction, I believe, by 2016. And so when you peer over into that world of assets, which is the one we're supposed to keep our eye on, right? It's just the equities, right? That the stock market, it's our major signaling mechanism. Everybody's looking at the stock market. It's every day in the news. Is it up? Is it down? It's up. Yay, we're happy. You didn't really believe in the stock market as a barometer of anything useful, do you?
Well, you and I had a similar experience. You put all this money into a mutual fund, and somehow the money disappears. You know, where'd the money go, you know?
Fool me once.
And I wrote another book called Who Took My Money? It's a system of the, the financial assets, which are stocks, bonds, mutual funds. They're real assets, like real estate, and I own oil wells, and they produce stuff. They actually produce stuff. But most people, I like the word you use, claims. You know, the paper asset world is just a claim. And it's so corrupt. It is so manipulated. There's no real value there. And exactly as you guys were telling my group of people, that when you own a stock, you're the last guy in line. Everybody else gets paid for you, and something bad happens. Stockholders are paid the least. The last guy standing in line is a stockholder.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
But yet, that's what's supposed to be when you're investing. You're supposed to be in stocks. It's an amazing feat of marketing. I think they've done an incredible job. I was just talking with another man today, his name Michael Schumann, and he talks about exactly what we're talking about, except he does it from the local investing side. And he says that if you look at communities where it's full of entrepreneurs, you have a lot of business startups, you have a lot of businesses that are thriving there, the per capita income is higher, and the per capita job creation is higher. And in every case, the defining factor is these are real people who understand real value and how to provide it, and they're providing it. And that's where real prosperity comes from.
Right. And you look in communities where the entitlement mentality is alive and well is poverty.
Yes.
And, so there's no production. It's a suck on production. It's all consumption, or you owe me a living. And it's just horrifying what's happened to the American dream. It's become the entitlement mentality. Again, starting from the top. You know, Ayn Rand warned us back in the 50s this was going to happen in a book, Atlas Shrugged. And it's happening. You know, today it's not Ayn Rand and Atlas Shrugged. The Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you have all these grotesque creatures in some major city who just prey on the people who are producing. That's Washington D.C. and the people are actually working out there. So it's Atlas Shrugged has come true, and that's what's even more frightening.
I was horrified when George Orwell's book 1984 started coming true in about 2003. It was almost like it was a blueprint, but Atlas Shrugged, you're right. It's literally following directly along the lines that she painted out at that point in time. Do you think, was it just already obviously in motion when she was writing that, or did she make a killer prediction?
Well, you and I said it's been going on for thousands of years. You know, that anytime you have ambitious or greedy or, you know, ruthless people, the innocent people fall victim to it unless you fight back. But if the people that control the money control everything, it's hard to fight back as a little person. And that's why you and I concur that we need to form our own little communities. I call them my tribe. Mm-hmm. But I have different tribes for different purposes. In case of civil unrest, you know, being a former Marine pilot, I have friends with guns, and we're going to tribe up together. Now, if it's a business, it's a different type of tribe, different type of person. I have accountants and attorneys. But I already have my house in the mountains ready to band together with my fellow, you know, Marines.
And we're laughing about it, morbid humor, just sad we even can have this conversation, and it seems realistic. But there is a wealth transfer coming up. That's what all of my study of history shows me, and it's been this way for forever. For the same sets of reasons, over time, people end up, governments always end up following the same course of action. It seems easy to print. It fixes things, you know? The budget seems to be fixed. John Law proved this, you know? They had 7 years of the most robust, incredible partying going on in Paris in the early 1700s because this guy John Law came along and convinced the French government to turn away from gold and silver and just start printing banknotes. The next 7 years were amazing. There were parties, and Paris was the number one destination for Persian carpets and rare spices and silks, and everybody was having a great time. But then it ended. And so you and I share the view that same ending's going to happen. How is it that people can be on the right side of that wealth transfer when it happens and not be on the wrong side?
Well, you said it best in the 3 day in Phoenix, is you've got to pay attention. Mm-hmm. And most people aren't paying attention. They're going up and working for money. Meanwhile, my rich dad and rich dad, poor dad, the rich don't work for money. And I'm not saying that's the answer. I'm just saying stop and think for a little while. Why are the rich not working for money? What are they doing? What am I doing wrong? You know, why am I paying so much more in taxes? Why am I getting upset with the government? Well, one of it, and being advocate of good financial education, we have no financial education in our schools. You ever wonder why that happened? You know, why we go to school to work for money, but there's no financial education in schools. So that's why I wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I create my board games and my electronic games and all this, because I believe in each and every one of us is a rich person. But we go to school to be told what to do instead of, it. You know, education comes from the word educe, to draw out of you. So inside of you is a rich person. So schools should draw out, educe, the rich person in you. But what they do instead of educe is they induce. They tell you to go to school and get a job, and they train you to be an employee working for money. So it's educe and induce. So I believe, you know, a person is a rich person, every single one of us, whether you do well in school or not. You look at the richest guys in the world today, they dropped out of school, like Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, Walt Disney, you know. You're going to say, well, what am I missing here? Well, you went to school, you were programmed to go get a job, and today kids are coming out of school, like in Europe, I think, with 50% of young people are unemployed or underemployed.
Yep.
And they're still going to school to get a job. Well, what's going wrong with that? It's because you've induced to them the idea that they should be an employee, not an entrepreneur.
You know, it was fascinating to me, fascinating. And at your seminars, you like games, and one of the games we played really drew out some of that behaviors in people, and on both sides, right? There was a game where people had to raise capital, and some people did it just like that, knew what to do, moved right into that space. Other people had more difficulty with that. A couple of people couldn't do it or didn't want to. And what was interesting to me in that was that it really clarified for me something that I think is just really vitally important. I talk a lot about how there could be a very disruptive future in front of us economically, financially, who knows, maybe even more, you know, with what we see in the Ukraine, war and social unrest looming over their heads. So in that moment, though, it was easy to see how some people moved easily into knowing what their value was and being able to offer it on the spot in order to participate in the game, and if, you know, the game of life, as it were, and other people didn't. I think that's valuable right there. That ability that if I could wave a magic wand and have people know something, it would be, what are those four things that you uniquely do better than anybody else that have value? I can't imagine a more important thing for people to start figuring out right now.
Yeah, it's called what do you bring to the table? You know, like when little boys or girls are choosing their softball team, you know, if you don't bring anything to the team, you sit on the bench.
Yep.
And that's what's going to happen. So, like, for me, as you know, I have lots of gold and silver. I have guns, a lot of bullets and all this stuff. So if I don't want it to happen, but if it does happen, I'm ready for it. At the same time, you know, like, you know, the mayor, Bloomberg and all, they want to take our guns away. I'm saying, why do they want to do that? You know, why are food stamps going up so high? Why is no financial education in school? And I've got to step back and say, there must be something else going on that I really don't know about. You know, there's a bigger game going on. And I think it's to impoverish us. That's really what I think it is, to make us little minion serfs who will do the beck and call of the uber rich. You know, so I'd rather just be rich and play by their rules, same rules as the rich. I don't want to play by the rules of the middle class and poor, because those are the guys who pay the taxes. Silly.
Well, the middle class have been the ones who've been footing the bill all these years for everything that's been going on. But, of course, we know the federal government's just been borrowing its way towards the future and has always been, I guess, if there was a plan, it was that somehow this miracle of economic growth would happen. But, of course, economic growth happens when a lot of industrious people are productive, and it requires resources that may or may not be there in the future. I think they won't be. And so we really have a sort of a mashup in this story coming, but you're absolutely right. From my perspective, when I look at both the education people get in school, but then the continuing education that happens across the airwaves, in the newspaper, in the media, the American news has the least amount of context of any news that I go across and read. Like what's happening in the Ukraine, I just read an interview that Putin gave, and he started in the 1700s so that people could understand the context of the Ukraine, and it was valuable, and it was important. A lot of context happening over there. And over here, it's just, it's been turned into a cartoon. You know, we have to show Putin we're strong, you know, and there's no context. I really think that Americans are without really important context on a routine basis.
I 100% agree with you. The problem with America is that we're too young, I think. That might be the problem. And we don't see far enough back in time in history. Or our school systems and even the trading systems on Wall Street, they're trading now minute to minute. But they're missing the big picture. You know, I was a student of Dr. Buckminster Fuller, the guy who created the geodesic dome and all that. And he says, if you want to be intelligent, you have to look at the biggest picture possible. Then you go small picture. But what happens for most people, they start small and go smaller. They become more highly specialized. Whereas I want to just be a generalist and look at the big picture of the world, what's going on with everything else, then make my decisions. But, you know, I just started with a little kid at 9 years old playing Monopoly with my rich dad. And my poor dad was the head of the school system. My rich dad was a best friend's father. At 9 years old, I was playing Monopoly, and so I asked my rich dad, I said, why am I doing this? He says, because it's one of the formulas for great wealth. I said, there's many formulas. Like you can marry somebody for money, that works too, you know. Win the lottery, that works too.
Yep.
Or you can get smart. And he says, so this is one of the games. And then we all know the formula for great wealth. It's four greenhouses, one red hotel. Four greenhouses, one red hotel. So I'm 9 years old, and I said, is that all there is? He says, that's it. In other words, take my money and convert it to assets that print money, that push money out. There. So today I have my big red hotel, and I have my golf course and all that. They all print money for me. Every month they send me money. It's not that hard to do if you start with the right context of what you're doing. That's fundamentally it. Also on the Monopoly game, an interesting rule is it says right in the rules of Monopoly, if the bank runs out of money, all the banker has to do is write money on the piece of paper. And so the Monopoly game, I learned the context of how the game is played at 9 years old. So I didn't want to go back to school and get a job. That was my context. I knew I could print my own money like the bank did, and I could just have a good time playing Monopoly. That was it.
I spent endless hours on that game. My favorite piece was the battleship. I think it does teach important lessons. So here we are, and we're looking at obviously the world economy is not behaving well, and they're printing money like crazy. So is the advice here that people, if they're so inclined, should go out and start to learn those entrepreneurial skills? Could everybody be an entrepreneur, or is this really a message for a subset of people?
No, I mean, I believe I believe there's a rich person in everybody. I also believe there's an entrepreneur in everybody. You know, there's a little young lady down the street, and she's always selling lemonade. I go, what? You know, I mean, she's an entrepreneur. The woman who cleans my house is an entrepreneur. You know, she's self-employed. But from there, above that first level of entrepreneurship, cleaning my house or selling lemonade, comes the next level of sophistication, education, and experience. But most people, it's easier to get a paycheck so they can work at McDonald's rather than become an entrepreneur. That's what's happening. They don't have the education or the experience or the ambition to get out of what I call the employee mindset. I'm going to work hard and get a paycheck and pay taxes. You know, that doesn't make sense from my context. I'd rather hire a lot of people to work hard and make a lot of money and pay less taxes because the tax service, Internal Revenue Service, rewards entrepreneurs. It punishes employees. And I'm not the guy who did it. I'm just reporting to you the way the system is rigged. Entrepreneurs get tax breaks. Employees don't get tax breaks. That's the system.
It is the system. It's your income gets taxed more heavily than your passive income, your active income. So that's just that's the system at present. Now you've your company has produced a game that's online now, and this game is this something that can help people begin to just work with some of these concepts?
Well, absolutely. Like I'll say it again. Okay, I believe inside of you is a rich person. The trouble is, and so the game, my game, Cash Flow, or the board game Monopoly, it was to educe, bring out of you the rich person. That's true education. But current system of education is an induction, to induce. They tell you what to do. You go to school, you get a job, you work hard, you save money, you buy a house because it's an asset, and you turn your money over to a financial planner so they can lose it. I mean, so you go, oh, I'm doing the right thing. I have a job, I'm working hard, I'm paying taxes, I bought a house, and I'm turning my money over to a financial planner. I'm diversifying. And you're going to get crushed. You and I are both saying the same thing. When the next crash comes, you're the guys get crushed, unfortunately.
Well, so, it is.
If you want to learn something new, play a game and then go do the real thing, you know? Really simple. Like, it's called practice. You know, in football, we practice, practice, practice. And theater is called rehearsal, rehearse, 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 rehearse. That's practice. But in the education system, you make a mistake, they punish you. And that's why people don't get out of that box. What if I make a mistake? What if I lose my money? Well, you should practice before you put your hard money in. But you don't do that. You just turn your money into a financial planner.
So here we are in early 2014, and we see that the world is doing what it's doing. And what would your advice be to anybody who's got, like this is the most common thing I run into. People who come to my seminars, they say, look, I'm working this job. I'm earning this paycheck. I'm really not fulfilled by it. I know there's this other life I want to lead, but it's a really big gap between where they currently are and where they want to be. What's some practical ways to start closing that gap up?
Well, I guess it starts with discontent, where you know in your gut that you're not on the right track for you. You know, when I came back from Vietnam in 73, my poor dad said, go back, get my master's, get my PhD, go work for the government. In my gut, I knew that wasn't for me. Now, it might be for you, but it's not for me. So to thine self be true. And the second thing, then, is what do I want to be? What role model do I want? That was my rich dad. It was my best friend's father in Hawaii. But it's not easy, but I had to want that. You know, education, the problem with education is they give you the right answer, and then you take, you know, they give you the answer, then you take the test. Mm-hmm. In real life, you take the test, you got to find your own answers out there. And it's not easy, man. You've got to be a very active learner. Like, every day I'm making so many mistakes, it makes me sick. I mean, when am I going to stop doing this? It's painful. But that's how we learn. You know, a kid learns to walk by falling down. But most kids leave school saying, if you fall down, you're stupid. But that's not real life. That's why most school teachers are not rich, or they have big paychecks and they have 401ks, but they're not rich people. It's a big difference.
That's absolutely invaluable insight there. You know, I just want to thank you for the warm reception that Adam and I had at the offsite there that you conducted in Phoenix. It was just a wonderful experience, and I was really gratified that a lot of people took the time to say that the Crash Course was a book that resonated with them, that provided some framing that they found useful and helpful. And of course, Adam's and my own stories were just stories of entrepreneurship. We both took big risks and jumped off because we were dissatisfied with our current lives, had to do something different. And now, you know, we've built some assets around that. So really, somehow, we managed to follow the path you recommend. And so I'm just one person who's saying, yeah, it works.
And then what you saw in the workshop is my team, you know, my advisors, the team of nine. I mean, we are tight. We have my accountants, my attorneys, my guys who raise capital for me, my sales guys and all this stuff. We're a team. You know, that's what makes you rich. You know, I talked about you have to be a master of pieces. So I put accountants, bankers, attorneys all together and all this, and that's how I get rich. But in school, rather than being a master of the pieces, you become one of the pieces. You come out of school as an accountant or attorney, and then the entrepreneur comes in and says, I'm going to put you together with the rest of my team. So you're either the master of pieces as an entrepreneur, or you're one of the pieces from school system. And so what you guys are doing right now is becoming the master of the pieces, putting your own team together or your community or your tribe. And that's what's going to cause us to survive.
And there's a great lesson in there, whether it's in business or in people's communities. This is really, that this conforms so well with the future I see coming, which is we need to disconnect from the larger systems, forget what they're telling us, or even take whatever they're telling us and reverse it 180 degrees and take that as the truth. But we have to start thinking for ourselves, planning for ourselves, controlling what we can, knowing we can't control everything, and become that master of the pieces in our own communities.
Right, especially when it comes to the world of money, as you and I would probably agree, it's probably the most corrupt of all the it's so corrupted. And the moment they could print money, it became more corrupt. And for people to be going, oh, I'm going to go to school, I'm going to work, I'm going to make a hot lot of high salary, you're probably going down the wrong trail, because the more money they print, the harder you have to work. Again, Ludwig von Mises says the more we print money, the poorer we get, more impoverished people get. So you better start thinking different. It's how do I convert my money into an asset? And that's what you and Adam have done.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of advice on that at our website at Peak Prosperity. We've been working on that, and we really hope to be rounding all of that out. And Robert, thank you so much for your time today. And I'm really looking forward to developing a relationship with you and your organization, because what you're doing is really vitally important. It's about educating people, providing the right context so that people can make their own decisions. And it's really just arming people with important information. So I think that's great work, and I want to commend you for that.
Well, thank you. As I said at the seminar, the definition of intelligence is, if you agree with me, you're intelligent. You guys are real intelligent. Anyway, thank you. And I really, you guys have really blessed my organization. And a lot of times they said, oh, that's what you're trying to tell me. I said, yeah. They don't listen to daddy. They listen to somebody else. But anyway, they got the message across. Thanks.
So sometimes it takes a couple of teachers. That's fine. So thank you for that. Really.
Yeah. Thanks, you guys. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. You too. Be well.
Right. Bye.